Hey there, are you getting ready for a road trip, maybe heading to the airport, or facing an ugly commute tomorrow? Now you can take Alt Latino and more with you on the road with the NPR One app. The suggestions in NPR One are hand-curated to help you find the best from public radio and beyond. News, local stories, and your favorite podcasts like Alt Latino. NPR One is ready to make your long trip better, and you can find NPR O-N-E, NPR One, on your app store. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Jasmine Garst is away this week. So this week, we're going to spend some time with an artist who I've always thought is very underrated and underappreciated, the great New Yorican percussionist and band leader, Willie Bobo. Now, he left us way too early in 1983, but what we're going to do is feature a new album from Willie Bobo, recordings that were found by his family and cleaned up for release, and we're also going to be joined by his son, Eric Bobo. Eric, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Felix.
Let's hear the rest of this track from the new album. It's called Round Trip, and then let's come back and talk a little bit about your dad, all right?
You got it.
Round Trip from a very welcomed new release from Willy Bobo, and we have Willy Bobo's son in the studio with us to talk about it. What's the name of the album, and tell us the story behind finding these lost tracks.
All right, well, the name of the album is called Dig My Feeling. I was asked to find something in my mom's closet. My mom asked me something, and in the midst of me looking, I found this stack of tapes. And as I looked through them, I was looking at the name, and I saw my dad's name, and I saw song titles that I had never heard before. And I said, "Mom, what are these tapes?" And she was very protective, and she said, "You know, don't mess with them, don't touch them, like don't even look at them, you know." But obviously, I couldn't just do that.
Right.
So I began to sneak out a few tapes. Some of them were like big, you know, quarter inch reel to reel. Some were smaller, you know, 8-track reel to reels, 16-track reel to reels, various sizes. So I took the smaller ones. So I was doing that a little bit, and I bring it over to Mario Caldado Jr., who also produced these releases with me, and was also a producer of the Beastie Boys and many other groups. And, you know, he cleaned them up, cleaned the goo off, cleaned all the stuff up, and made it come to life. And finally, after like 7 songs, I had a CD, and I showed my mom. I said, "Ma, look, I've been taking these tapes out, right? But there's some really good music here. There's some really good music here, and I think it deserves to be out, and I think people will love it. But you listen to it, and if you do not like it, I will stop right now." And she took a weekend, and she said, "Continue what you're doing." And she gave me her blessing, and then we were off from there. And then it was a long process because, you know, in between scheduling, you know, touring, you know, I was on the road, Mario would be on the road. So sometimes we would work on 2 songs in a year, you know, and then get back to it. So in total, it took some time. But I think in the end result, you know, we got something that's, you know, really nice. And, you know, it's good to have some quote unquote new music from an iconic artist.
Let's step back a little bit and do like an overview of your father's career. For those folks who are not familiar with his music, he was New Yorican, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about, what does that mean? Where does he come from? What was that environment like? And how did he get into the music? And who were some of those first people he played with back then?
Well, being a New Yorican, you know, descended from parents that were born in Puerto Rico. And living in New York, came over, you know, and did that. And he's one of 5 children. He was in the middle. And, you know, my grandfather, his father, Pedro, you know, he was also a musician. He played guitar. And, you know, he had a band, little band that would play the little house parties, you know. And he started playing with him. And living out there in Spanish Harlem, Manhattan, you know, right there in the thick of it, you know, where all those cats, you know, grew up, you know, or close to it. And just being surrounded by all that music. Started playing at like 14 years old professionally.
This would be about late 40s, right?
Yes, because he was born in 1934. And then, you know, coming up and playing like with Marcelino Guerra, you know, which was one of his first, you know, big bands that, you know, at the time that he had played with, started out with. You know, playing on bongo, you know, and then, you know, graduated, you know, congas, you know, and played that. Then eventually, you know, went to timbales. And at 18 years old, you know, he was voted Percussionist of the Year by Downbeat Magazine.
Wow.
You know, you're talking about a guy that, you know, he didn't go past the 9th grade. He didn't read or write music. But he had the rhythm in his soul. You know, he took chances. He loved to be challenged, and he did that. And by 20 years old, he's playing with Tito Puente for 5 years.
So he came of age during a time, like we said, in the late 1940s, post-World War II, when the music scene in New York was exploding. This is when
yes.
Musicologists, anybody who's a fan, we'll acknowledge that that's when Latin jazz more or less was coalesced and invented right there in the streets of New York and in the clubs. And it involved Afro-Cuban musicians from New York. It also involved New Eureka musicians, a lot of musicians, including your father, Willie Bobo, Ray Barreto, guys like that. They were all contemporaries. They all played during that time, which to me is, if I had a time machine, I would love to go back just for a
me
night.
Too.
You know what I mean?
Me too.
One night at the Palladium, man. That's all I need.
I mean, to hear the stories about that, you know, it's incredible. You know, my mom, you know, was with my father from the age of 17.
Wow.
When they were 17. They were born like a week and a half or so apart, you know, same year. Those stories about the Palladium and the dancing and Machito, Tito Rodriguez, and, you know, Tito Puente, and come on, you know, Symphony Sid, all of these classic, you know, stories that, you know, some of the, you know, the people of now, they can't even fathom what that was really, really like. But, you know, you have all these musicians that were incredible, you know, percussionists, horn players, arrangers. You know, I mean, it was an incredible time, not only in Latin jazz, mambo, because it wasn't salsa, it was mambo, you know, also in traditional jazz, you know. The music scene was just booming out there in New York. It was incredible. So to be back there, I mean, a time machine, that would be just to see and witness that.
That was the Palladium Ballroom that we're talking about was like a ground zero for all the bands that played in New York during that time. It was run strictly as a public place for people all over New York, but mostly uptown for our Latinos to come down and the bands to perform. And, you know, the universe conspired to make that Palladium Ballroom right around the corner from 52nd Street on the strip of clubs where the jazz world was happening at that time. You know, Charlie Parker, Charlie Mingus, Dizzy Gillespie, Thelonious Monk, all of the great bebop players were working there at that time. So they would, I've heard stories and I've interviewed musicians where, you know, the jazz guys would take a break and go check out the mambo at the Palladium, and the Palladium musicians would go in and soak up all the jazz. So it was truly a cross-cultural environment, one of the first in this country, I think, that really created to creating something new.
Exactly. I mean, my dad's favorite drummer, jazz drummer, was Philly Joe Jones. He really soaked up, you know, that jazz, and my dad did sessions as a jazz drummer as well, you know, so he was able to musically bridge that gap and be able to do different styles. I mean, he had the rhythms all within. So to do jazz and be a fan of that and to watch that, he soaked that up like a sponge. And I guess that's what you had to do. You know, you had to be able to set yourself apart. And, you know, he was a session player as well. You know, I mean, he would get called for all these sessions and have to turn down and give away sessions because he was in demand, you know, not only as a percussionist, but also as a drummer.
As a straight ahead jazz drummer.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go back in the Wayback Machine here real quick and play something from, this is a track from, I want to say it's like the mid to early 50s. This is Tito Puente on timbales, Mongo on conga, and your dad on bongo. And it's every percussionist definitive ground zero. This is the way it's supposed to sound recording, right? And it was, and they called it Timon Bo, right? So everybody gets a little solo, and it's got a killer bass line everybody knows by now. I'm going to play a little bit of the section where your dad is killing on the bongo at the beginning. Thank you. It's a fantastic record because it's a handful of percussionists in it, and principally Mongo Santa Maria, your dad Willie Bobo, and Tito Puente, and all of everything's like it's orchestrated. All the percussion parts are orchestrated. It's a jam, but it's arranged in a way that Tito Puente, you know, incredibly creative musician that he was, would do in a studio in even just a jam.
I mean, the thing about it is that as far as a percussion section, you know, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, percussion ensemble of all time is Tito Puente, my dad, and Mongo Santa Maria. I mean, that combination, for those 5 years that they were all together, they were unstoppable. They just had a chemistry that was, you know, undeniable.
An amazing percussion section that eventually left the band, right?
Yeah.
They left the band and moved out to California to play with Cal Jader, vibraphonist out there. Yeah. And I remember I interviewed Cal years ago, like in 78, just before he passed. And he was talking about how he was almost, you know, in awe and couldn't believe his luck that he would get the hottest rhythm section going out there and come out to California to play with him.
My dad really, again, he was into different styles of music and really into jazz and didn't want to be pigeonholed so much, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that move out west, being out there in San Francisco, that different vibe, the different, you know, musical energies, you know, it opened up a whole other ball of wax for him musically. You know, I mean, he was able to come up with the, you know, the Spanish Grease. He was able to come back and do Fried Neck Bones. He was able to, you know, to do that because eventually he did return back to New York. But his range had just opened up a little bit more because the West Coast sound, they were more receptive to the mixture of Latin jazz.
Right.
You know, they were more open for that.
In and of itself, okay, if you played that well and you played like that and you defined the sound of small group Latin jazz, that would have been enough, right? Almost. Yeah. Like you rest on your laurels right there, right? But for guys like Willie Bobo and Mongo Santa Maria, they expanded. They went out. And in particular, I've always considered what they did separately. They closed a circle on the African diaspora by combining Afro-Caribbean music that they were born and raised and played with, Mongo from Cuba and Willie Bobo from Puerto Rico, with soul music, right? With soul and jazz that was developed here in the United States. And that next phase of their career is reflected in that kind of music.
You know, my dad always would say, you know, music is a universal language, and yes, it is. I mean, you know, you don't have to speak the same language, but you can communicate quite well within music. You know, I mean, it transcends. And I think that's a very, very true statement.
Let's play one of the tracks you mentioned just a little bit ago, Spanish Grease.
That was about like 65, and that was actually off the Spanish Grease was off the self-titled album on Verve. That was like 65, 66, around in there.
Thank you.
Spanish Grease from the great artist Willie Bobo from early 1960s. Now, this is during an era that we've explored here on Alt Latino in the past, when Boogaloo was really starting to pick up and become not just a popular music, but a cultural force in New York specifically. And a lot of the records that were released under your dad's name were considered part of that and now looked back upon as some of the foundation for that sound.
As long as it was Latin and it had that, you know, that rhythm, you know, you're able to put anything on it. It worked. And it's now seeing a resurgence, and, you know, I've seen some groups now that, you know, are doing it, like the Boogaloo Assassins. I've seen right. them, and they kind of bring that, you know, that feeling back, and, you know, people love it.
Yeah, that whole style is hot again. And I think, personally, it's a little bit of nostalgia, but also because, like you said, it just swings and grooves like crazy, man. You cannot resist it.
Exactly. I mean, you're it's toe-tapping right there. It's feel-good music. And I think that was a big thing that my father enjoyed, you know, doing in his performances. He loved to just make the people move.
Let's move forward now to the era when this new record that's been released from tapes that were found at your mother's house. What year were these tapes recorded?
These tapes span the years of 1970 to 1976. Some of the songs were precursors to the album Do What You Want to Do that came out in 71. Others were just, you know, when he wasn't signed. He wasn't signed to anyone, so it was just like recording, you know, recording music, exploring different ideas, you know, different grooves, you know, different, you know, things without the pressure of a label. These songs from the Dig My Feeling album kind of like go in between this little gap.
This is the title track called Dig My Feeling.
They call me the guy with a lot of feeling. Oh, so much feeling.
I think that you can trace an arc, right? There's a line of continuity that is there once he started mixing in Latin and jazz and even soul from about probably like at least the early 60s, like that 63 album, 64, on through his stuff we're listening to right now. There is a heavy emphasis on the two and the four, the soul music, the jazz, the funk, or the pre-funk even, and how it meshes perfectly with the guajira from Cuba, in some instances with the bolero. Like, I think what I always admired about him and the music that he chose was how it never sounded forced. And a lot of this stuff that you listen to from back then, it sounds kind of forced. You know,
right,
you
right.
know, some of the funk and the Latin, some of it, I'm not gonna mention any names, but some of it sounds forced. But Willie Bobo's music always had like a groove, always had that central groove, and it felt natural.
Yes, it was important for him, you know, as a musician, you know, to keep that emphasis on the groove. You know, he understood that. You know, I would watch him, you know, conduct rehearsals, and he wanted to make sure that there was pocket. There needed to be pocket. You know, there needed to be that tightness. You know, I mean, in the song like Dig My Feeling, which I think that that's boogaloo. That I think that kind of qualifies as something like a boogaloo. But you hear the bass line is like real groove, you know, it's like funky groove, you know. Drums are there, just solid. Everything is there. It's a pocket. And that's what he was, you know, very, very strong about.
Never too late.
Okay, Eric, before we continue with our conversation, let's play another track from the new album. And I want to play this song because it's slower. And I think it gives listeners a chance to really absorb and spend some time with that magic combination of Latin and soul and jazz. And it has a very appropriate title for what you found. It's called Lost Years.
Thank you.
did all of his music influence you and the work that you've done? And I think we should say at this point that you know, you have a solo career. You've been working on your own for a while, but you also have played with the Beastie Boys. You played with Cypress Hill. Tell us a little bit about how your father's music influenced you and the music that you play now as a percussionist.
It goes back to the soul and the groove. You know, I remember when my father showed me how to play drums, you know, he would do these little funk grooves playing drums. It wasn't a Latin groove, which he could do, but it was just that funk. And I grew up, you know, listening to the music that my brother was listening to, and those were like those early Earth, Wind & Fire records, you know, and then listening to those jazz fusion records like Weather Report and Return to Forever and, you know, all of this stuff. Then hip-hop. He heard early hip-hop. You know, his band would kick a beat, and then I would take the mic and do Rapper's Delight during his shows. Okay? Producers, hip-hop producers, were making, you know, they were sampling songs and sampling music, and they knew of my pops. Why? Because they're digging for records. They're digging for grooves. You know, I had people like Q-Tip come up to me and say, yo, man, that Willie Bobo album, Do What You Want to Do, is funky record. And I'm like, wow, you know about my dad. You know, for me, even playing in groups like the Beastie Boys and Cypress Hill, two of the most iconic hip-hop groups ever, it's not so far-fetched that I'm doing that. Because what I'm playing my Latin instruments, my congas, bongo, timbales, djembe, I'm playing all of that. I'm playing rhythms that I grew up playing, and I'm mixing it with hip-hop.
And in a way, do you feel like you're extending it out, carrying it out further?
In some ways, yes. And I think that also I'm fulfilling my mission to carry on the Bobo legacy. You know, my dad would always say before I came on stage that I'd be the one to, you know, follow in his footsteps and, you know, keep this on going, you know. And I think that with this new album, Dig My Feeling, and uncovering this new music, you know, and being able to expose Willie Bobo to this audience, a new audience, for me, it's like a mission accomplished.
Eric Bobo, I'm sure he's looking down and beaming with pride, man, because you're doing a great job with your own music and then releasing this new record. Thank you so much for joining us this week, man.
Thank you very, very much, Felix, for having me. And thank you to everybody out there and for supporting Willie Bobo. And hope you guys enjoy the record.
And normally we would close the show with a track from the new album, but I want to play this track real quick. Tell us what this is.
This is a song that we did, only song that we recorded together. It's called Father and Son. This is off his Bobo album, came out in 79. And this was his last album that he made when he was alive. And actually the last track on the whole album.
So it seems like appropriate to play this now. Again, Eric, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you very much, man.
I want to remind you that you can hear all the music we play today on our website at npr.org/altlatino. Don't forget to reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Jasmine Garz will be back very soon. This has been Alt Latino.
Once in a life, there comes a man like you, and you bear a son much like yourself. It's hard to believe that he's grown into a man, but Papa, I understand. Once every night, I thank my lucky star. You've given me some guiding light. But there comes a time when a father and a son can no longer be one.
Once in a life, there comes a dad like you, and you bear sons much like yourself. It's hard to believe I'm